My old chum, Kenny Thomas, who joins us now. Morning, Kenny.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
Good to talk to you. We were just saying off air that the last time I think we physically met up was at your birthday party about 12 years ago.
That's right, at my 40th, yeah, giving my age away there. yeah, what a night that was. I vaguely remember it.
Yeah, I think I'm probably about the same, actually, Kenny. Lovely to have you on the show today. I don't think I've ever interviewed you before for radio, even though I've been doing it all these years and you've been where you are all these years.
No, you haven't, but you've got me now. You've captured me.
Let's go back to the beginning, because if I was going to do a kind of pub quiz and said which singer started out as a boxer and a BT technician, they probably wouldn't come up with you, Kenny.
They probably wouldn't know. Amateur boxer, never professional, but only professional singer. But the BT engineer, that story stuck for years. That comes from Radio 1 from Simon Bates, that does. I never was an engineer, never clever enough for that. I worked in the offices at BT.
Oh, really? It's an urban myth, then?
Yeah, it's an urban myth, along with another one that the record company did, because it's in, I mean, obviously, I assume you're going to chat about my autobiography that's coming out later this year.
Absolutely.
But obviously, another one was when they attempted to get me a Radio 1 play, and they come up with a story that I was discovered in a karaoke bar. And it took me all of 2 years afterwards to undo that story. That's record companies for you, Bill. They come up with all sorts of nonsense.
That's fantastic. So there's no point in calling you out when my fibre optic goes down, then you'd be useless.
No, I can't help you there. I can't help you.
So how did it all begin then, Kenny? What was the kind of initial push into music for you? Was it at Eddie Grant's studio?
It was. I mean, I started out, I did a little bit of Amdram as a kid, you know, some that sort of stuff. And I got into, a band at my local church, and we were doing sort of the normal stuff, some of the happy clappy, but a bit of gospel. And then obviously the 80s came along, and all the friends around me all started to buy instruments like Mini Moog keyboards and bass guitars. And we started to get together and jam. We were buying a lot of vinyl. But then I got my first kind of mini break when a good friend of mine who's passed away now, called Freddie Sassoon, bless him, he was friends with Eddie Grant's brother Patrick, and Eddie Grant's old studio, which was called the Coach House, wasn't far away from where I lived, and that's where Eddie did a lot of his early recordings, like Living on the Front Line and stuff like that. He subsequently moved to Barbados, made a lot of money, and built a big all singing, all dancing studio over there.
Yeah.
Now so we got in there, and someone put some money up, a friend of Freddie's who was a jeweler on Hatton Garden put up some dough, and we recorded two records there with Eddie Grant's studio. Eddie came in and listened to them one night, and he said to me, "Go, you've got a very good pop voice." And so I just took that for what it was, and I thought, well, if I've got a good pop voice, then maybe I've got a chance of having a bit of a pop career, you know?
Wow. But you'd kind of grown up on a very multicultural housing estate in North London, so your kind of thing was soul and jazz funk, wasn't it?
Yeah, my thing was soul, jazz, funk, reggae, dubwise, lovers rock.
Yeah.
You know, later on I got into jazz fusion. It was only really in the late 90s that I started to sort of uncover what I call white music in the 60s and stuff like that, and starting to do a bit of my homework with that, you know, because I wasn't really exposed to it. But I grew up really only being around pretty much black music, apart from my dad, who would play, you know, your Dean Martins, Matt Munro and Johnny Mathis, and my mum, being Spanish, would play a lot of Spanish music. That's those sort of Latin grooves, but which also is, you know, was really, really nice. But but largely it was because of my friends and their older brothers, and a lot of those friends of mine, you know, that their mums and dads came over on the Windrush, you know what I mean?
Wow.
So they brought a lot of, they had a lot of collections of early ska music and stuff like that, and early reggae, you know?
Yeah. When somebody said you had a great pop voice, a lot of people would go, oh, well, I don't want to do pop, because I've had this kind of problem. As you know, I've written lots of pop hits, and you know, pop is short for popular, and why wouldn't you want to be popular?
Well, you know, some of my favourite artists, like, you know, like Michael Jackson, and producers like Quincy Jones, I mean, it was soulful, but it was popular, you know, it was pop.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I've made self-indulgent soul records over the last 20 years, and I'm very pleased with them.
Yeah.
But they have no chance of making it onto mainstream radio. But obviously, the new album I'm recording now is a departure from that, and going back to that kind of soulful pop route, you know?
Brilliant. Your debut hit, many people won't remember, was a cover, actually. Outstanding was The Gap Band from 83, I think it was.
It was, and a very daring and brave move to touch that record, because it had been a minor hit for them in the early 80s, and to many people out in the sort of soul beard stroking world, they, you know, they were like, look, that's untouchable. But we went for it, and we had a bigger hit with it than the Gap Band did.
Amazing.
So it got us out of the starting blocks and into the race, and then I suppose we followed it up later on, a few weeks later with an original, you know.
Yeah, and you know, it really was a meteoric rise, wasn't it? I mean, it's the same year, I think, Thinking About Your Love was there, and Best of You, and you had your album Voices, Brit nominated, and all the rest of it. It was a meteoric rise. But I think the thing about it, Kenny, and I'm sure you won't mind me saying this, is what you did was you were the kind of you were the kind of British blue eyed soul voice that we just hadn't heard before, and you were kind of making that kind of crossover between soul and pop that just worked.
Yeah, you had artists that were soulful. I mean, Rick Astley came with his late 80s. You had other artists like Clive Griffin.
Oh, yeah,
and people
great.
Like who were doing soulful sounds. And even people like Peter Cox out of Go West.
Yeah.
That, you know, it was very soulful, but it had the 80s sound. I suppose I was coming with something that was typically late 80s black sounding in a way. Now, you know, with that being said, it was meteoric. I mean, I never expected that, you know, when we got onto Top of the Pops with Outstanding, I never suspected for one minute that I'd go on and do it a further eight times. I did nine Top of the Pops in 1991, you know.
Wow. And what about your soul crowd? Did they regard you as selling out, or were you kind of a homegrown hero for them?
I think, you know, no, they've stuck with me and stayed true, you know. I think particularly because of the last 15, 20 years where I've really made some really great soul records that have been big on that scene, I've not deserted them. But I suppose there may have been a few when you become a so-called pop star and have your 15 minutes of fame. Some of those would certainly think there's a departure at that point. But, you know, you can win them back over again by making, you know, good records again, you know.
Yeah. And the thing about it was for you that you could get up there and you could sing live. You know, a lot of these people at the time were having hit records where there was a lot of manufacturing going on, but you could get up there and just sing your heart out.
Yeah, I mean, and it's something that I've learned and grown, you know, and become better the more you do it. Certainly, in those earlier days, it was okay, it was acceptable, and I could sing live, and having done hundreds and hundreds of gigs over the years, now you know you feel like maybe you're better than you ever were.
Yeah.
But certainly, but there were those TV shows like the early Top of the Pops where we had to mime, and that for me was a real anathema.
Yeah.
That was something that I absolutely hated mining.
I'll bet you did, yeah. And what about the whole kind of pop star thing, which when you buy into this game, it's part of what you do? You know, a lot of people moan about it these days when they become stars for whatever celebrity angle it may be, whether it's the only way is Essex or whatever it may be, and they moan about the bits that come with it. But, you know, it's part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's changed because of social media and people being able to immediately contact you and troll you almost.
Yeah.
That changes it a lot. So there's different pressures. But there was a lot of pressure back then. And I think you have to accept that with the roses come thorns, you know. And if you want that, there's things with being a pop star that are uncomfortable and you know, that don't feel like your life is your own anymore. But, you know, that's what you wanted to do. You can't have success with it without that coming along, you know, the fame aspect. And it can be a drag at times when you just can't it just be normal for one day? And but then, you know, for me, I haven't had hits for a long time, so life did become normal again, and now I go and do my gigs and I get in front of an audience, and it's almost like I can go and do it and then leave it, you know.
Yes. And it's hard to keep that kind of level of success up for very long. I mean, you know you exploded, and to get that level of success and keep it up there is almost impossible, you know, unless you are somebody like Michael Jackson being fed the world's best songs, because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, it is. It is impossible, and I don't think I could have sustained it for, you know, continually, and whether it had done me that much good anyway, sustaining it like that. I mean, it's nice to come off the treadmill, and again, you know, as I say, 30 years on, I'm still making music, still gigging, and so I can't complain. You know, I mean, a lot of people it's a flash in the pan, and they're gone. You know,
yeah. You certainly weren't sitting around on your backside. You completed a Bachelor of Science degree in acupuncture and oriental medicine. Is that an urban myth as well?
No, that's actually true.
Wow.
No, I got into alternative medicine, complementary medicine, a number of years ago.
Wow.
I started to look into it about 1999, 2000, and then I took the plunge, by 2010, I passed a Bachelor of Science degree.
How amazing.
In that. And I've gone on and studied other things in that whole world, and it's just really something that became a bit of an interest and an obsession, and I thought, well, there's only one way I can really know about this, and that's to actually, you know, take the plunge and study it properly.
Yeah, good for you. And of course, that kind of approach to life would you wouldn't know it at the time, but stand you in good stead when back in 2017 you got the news that any parent would absolutely dread, and that was your beautiful daughter Christina, who was only 4 at the time, was diagnosed with a high grade brain tumor, which would be, you were told, unlikely to respond to treatment. I mean, I can't imagine that moment, Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely devastating, and in some respects still is. I mean, yeah, she was diagnosed with that tumor, which is both a high grade and a low grade aspect. And we were told in no uncertain terms that she had 6 months to live, 9 months if we took their treatment. I refused the treatment because I said, well, what's the point of an extra 3 months and her laying in hospital with no hair and having going through, you know, sort of an aggressive form of treatment that isn't going to save her? I mean, that became a battle in itself, and I explore that and I unpack that a bit in the autobiography I've got coming out later this year.
Yeah.
Now, I then, you know, sort of, for want of a better word, went outside of the box, spoke to doctors. I already knew a few doctors, and there was, I ended up speaking to professors as far afield as Mexico,
goodness,
India, America.
Me.
And then eventually I sort of focused in on a particular doctor in a clinic in Germany. We went to Cologne 16 times for like an immunotherapy that you just simply cannot get here, and it comes at a great price financially. And we went there 16 times, and amongst other things that we've done, obviously the Chinese medicine, I incorporated that into a protocol along with many other things and experts I've met from a guy from Israel who has a wealth of knowledge in tackling cancer and managing cancer. So the end result is, you know, 4 years, 2 months on, my daughter is still alive. Is she cured? No. But is she's living with it as opposed to dying from it at this stage.
That's incredible.
So, you know, and it is an incredible story, and as I say, I unpack that in the book and explore it as much as I can, you know. And certainly it made me realise that there are other ways of tackling disease and managing disease with the body, and it doesn't always, you know, if you've got a wasp nest in your roof, you don't need to drop a napalm bomb on your house.
Yes,
and
yeah,
that for me is really the long and short of what some of these so-called treatments that are available or thrust on people, making them feel that's their only option.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Bill, the thing is, it takes a hell of a lot of money, and we had a certain amount of money, and we pulled it out of everywhere we possibly could, realizing there was still a shortfall. And then, because going to Cologne was expensive, and the treatment's expensive. So in the end, you know, this is the other side of that coin. Yes, it's devastating, it's life-changing, and we're still heartbroken. But the thing is, because, you know, she's not entirely right. She's slightly disabled from that tumour in terms of her walking and her arm, her right arm can't work properly.
Mm.
But so, you know, you're living with it every day. But the human side of this story is like your Tony Hadleys, you're living in the box, your Majors, your Nick Kershaw, your Incognitos, your Jocelyn Browns, Omar. The list is massive of artists that rallied around us. Kim Wilde, Go West, Heaven 17. They rallied around us over the last 3-4 years, raising funds, introducing us to people that did that. And so we literally were able to put that money with our own money, and it slowly but surely has made its way over to Cologne. And now she's under a different doctor in Frankfurt on a different type of treatment, which meant we didn't have to travel. So even with the lockdown, they could still ship the meds to us. And in the coming months, when things ease up a bit more, I will then probably go back to Cologne and incorporate that treatment alongside the new one from Frankfurt. And all the way along, as you're buying time, and they're still alive, and she's got quality of life, she's at school today, most days she's singing and dancing, she hasn't been subjected to a treatment where she's, you know, in hospital, emaciated with no immune system.
Yeah.
We've done the opposite, we've built up her immune system, we've boosted it, super boosted it.
Wow.
Now, the thing is, what it does, it also buys you time, because in the world of brain tumours, there's nothing changing faster than that.
Yep.
So you just do not know, like some of these treatments she's on now, the one she's on now from Fempa, I didn't know about it a year and a half ago. But I know about it now, and she's on it. What will present itself in the next 6-7 months that we don't know about that may be an even bigger game changer?
Yes, absolutely. What was the reaction of the medical profession in the UK when you kind of broke ranks and went outside?
Well, I would highly recommend that, even if you're not into me as a singer or an ex-pop star, read my book, because it was a battle.
Yeah.
You know, they want to force their treatment. They can be quite coercive and quite manipulative, and they need to be seen to be doing something.
Yeah.
And suddenly, when you're out, so, you know, when you're trying to relinquish their grip and say, "Hey, you know what? This is my daughter.
Yeah.
You can't save her. Show me the evidence. Show me a little girl that you've seen with you've got with that tumour that you've cured." Right, you can't show me it, let me go.
Yeah.
So I can go to the bigger, wider world, where there are a number of other treatments available around the world that really we should be having them here, because we've got the money, we've got the intelligence and the know-how, but the politics and even the money stops that. But it's like, let me go abroad and explore something else that may, at the least, extend her survival time.
Absolutely.
Which it clearly has.
Absolutely. Kenny, our heart breaks for you, but what a brave thing your little girl has done. You always use the word brave when you talk about her on your social media page, and she must be extraordinarily brave.
She is. She's a tough cookie, and she's been the most, you know, the greatest fighter. And coming from a boxing background, I've met a lot of great fighters, and she is the greatest fighter I've ever met.
Bless you. Well, more on that will be in the book, which is coming out when, Kenny, the book?
Well, at the moment, we're aiming for the end of the summer. I mean, one of the biggest problems we've got now is manufacturing times because of pandemics. Everything's been extended, so we're hoping for the end of the summer. It's shortly about to be proofread and hopefully move towards that manufacturing stage. But and obviously, I've gone back to the drawing board and added in another chapter or two, which I put on Facebook and let people know that was happening.
Yeah.
Just some bits that needed to go in there just to, you know, to open up the story a bit more and conclude it in a certain way.
So
end of the summer, it'd be worth the wait. People can pre-order that. You can go to a website called Music Glue, as in the sticky stuff, GLUE.
Right.
Music Glue, and just do a search for Kenny Thomas. It will come up, and they'll enjoy the book. It's got everything in there: ups and downs, the sideways, the rock and roll, you know, the successes, the failures, and then obviously the Christina story and that ongoing battle, you know.
Absolutely. And musically, I think you built a studio at home. I saw the building documented on Facebook.
Yeah, I've got a nice little setup here where I'm recording vocals. I've just, you know, just completed one vocal last week, and I've got some great music on the go between here and other studios. Like, my wife made a record. She's a great singer, by the way. My wife, Francisca, she made a record with Incognita during lockdown, and so we recorded all the vocals here.
Brilliant.
Then they went to Bluey's studio. Then they went to another studio where the brass could be laid down, and then went to another studio to be mixed and mastered. So between my studio and another three studios, we made a record without any of us even meeting up.
Wow. Wow, how fantastic.
You couldn't do that in the 90s, Bill. What did I have to do? I had to get on a ferry and come to you in the Isle of Wight, didn't I?
You had to go and stay in a dodgy guest house in the Isle of Wight and come to me. It's exactly right.
Exactly. And it was cold and windy.
You're not wrong, Kenny. You're not wrong.
Next time, you invite me over to Marbella in the summer, and we'll do the writing there.
There we go. That's a much better plan. And what about live stuff? Because somebody like you, I know, thrives on getting out there and doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pain. The lockdowns literally stopped everything, as you know. But all of those gigs now have been picked up and literally, you know, thrust into the end of this year. So some of the festivals, I've got a couple next month, and then it starts to build and build. So obviously, notwithstanding any further variants and, you know, any further lockdowns, but it will be and should be a very, very busy time as the year goes on.
Good.
And we've got a tour in October. So we're going to just do our best to get to those gigs and do them and get people out and enjoying themselves again, because I know that they're itching. People are itching to have some fun.
Absolutely. Well, you certainly had some fun with another old chum of mine, Gary Barlow, doing the crooner session, which people absolutely loved.
Yeah, I'm very grateful to Gary for asking me to do that. I mean, it was late in the day. I think he did 90 of them, and I was one of the later ones. But yeah, it was great, and I enjoyed it very much. And he's a great guy.
Oh, he is.
True professional, yeah. Absolutely awesome. And you know, it surprised me because obviously I come from a different era. It wasn't the social media era that I come from, although I dip my toe in it, but I can't say I'm very good at it.
Yeah.
But it had to date, I think someone told me it's had over 4.5 million views.
Wow.
Which is, for someone, you know, with my past history and my age and the rest of it, it's not a bad thing, you know. It's put me in good stead, and it let a lot of 90s fans, a lot of people that followed music in the 90s, let them know that I hadn't fallen off the edge of the flat earth. I was still here, and I can still sing, you know.
You certainly can, I tell you that, mate. No problem there. Well, I think what we'll do is, when the book's out again, we'll get you back on for a bit of a catch-up and see where life is then, because I'm sure things will have changed. They seem to be changing ever so quickly for all of us these days.
That would be lovely.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that, Kenny. Brilliant to talk to you, my old chum, and lots of hugs and prayers to your family, and particularly to Christina. And you keep up the fight, Kenny, and we will speak to you again really, really soon.
Take care, Bill.
Pleasure to talk to you, mate. Take care.
Bye, mate.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.